My bad, I forgot the format.
It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a whole summer.
These guys are like supposed to work months. This out in the preseason. Come on.
We don't do the two shows in the preseason.
See, this is a lesson about how to use the preseason better.
Yeah, I feel like we've started off. I feel like we've started off
0-3. Oh, we have. We started out 0-132.
It's bound to turn around any episode now.
Yeah, so just prepare to.
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. Whee! I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That must be Jervis with the shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounce kids?
Hitler. Just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Unbeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. Today is November 1st, 2015, and this is episode 132, company from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're talking about the games against Toronto, Memphis, and Utah. Joining me are our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacer fans? What's up, Unbeatables? Disappointing loss for D.C. United today, but it's okay. Because the Pacers are... Okay, sorry. The Colts are going to win tomorrow, though, so it's going to be awesome.
There we go.
Oh, Wade.
From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? We're recording on All Saints Day. Halloween's my favorite holiday. Had a good time yesterday at the Irvington Halloween Fair, and lots of good costumes. I was a yoga pose, the cat cow. Now, I was only that because I had a cow costume but didn't have any cow ears, but nobody needed to know that.
Coming from Seattle, Washington, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, fellas? Hasn't been a great start, but I am nonetheless excited about a new NBA season. Let's get it on.
Yeah. It is nice, I can say, to, before we started recording, I just put on a game. The Bucks, it doesn't even matter who's playing, because I can just put on a game that people cared about. And it's good to see. So we got, as we heard this week that, we were sad to hear this week, Mel Daniels, Indiana Pacers legend, has passed away. This guy was Rookie of the Year in the ABA, leading rebounder in the history of the league, star center for the team when they won all their ABA titles. Definitely sad to hear about that. What do you guys got to say?
Not a whole lot. So, I mean, obviously I'm sad that Mel Daniels has passed, but I guess the thing that I, hearing this news, I most regretted was that I never really had a relationship with Mel Daniels. I mean, I knew his name and sort of that he was an integral member of the Pacers, and now I'm very sad that I didn't actually learn more about him while he was around.
Yeah, I guess all of us are too young to... we definitely never watched him play. But I had seen him, you know, at the field house. I was, you know, schmoozing it up and talking to people and you know, everything I've always heard was that he was a great guy and, you know, good to have around the team, good to have around the players.
Well, yeah, integral part of the team. I mean, just constantly coaching and you know, being a part of that Pacer family, even if he wasn't being paid as a coach, you know, he was just around. And, yeah, that's pretty cool. He was an amazing basketball player, but apparently also, you know, a wonderful role model for these young kids.
The interesting stat that Chris Denari threw, it was the Did You Know, actually, in the Jazz game. Mel Daniels, one of four guys to average 18 points and 14 rebounds. I think for his career, although they didn't specify, could be in one season. The other three, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and Bob Pettit, who are like the three best big men ever to play basketball. So it's good company. I mean, clearly the dude was a beast.
My fun fact is that when they did the sort of all NBA, but it was ABA, all ABA awards, you know, so the all ABA team, he clearly made it. But they went for the all-time ABA MVP, and he came in second place behind Dr. J. So that's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, granted, Dr. J got like 48 votes, and he got like, you know, two. But still, came in second place. It's pretty cool. That's high respect, you know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, they're having a memorial at the field house this week. But it's a bummer. But, yeah, I got nothing else to say about that. It's finally here. Opening night for the 2015-2016 season. It was October 28th, and they start on the road going to the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, yeah, go ahead whenever you want.
That's the sound of the not all that fast break.
And boy, they started off hot. Put up 30 in the first quarter, if I remember correctly. And could not sustain that pace, going down 99-106. Jason, what did you see from that game?
This game was frustrating. I mean, it was a tough loss, obviously. I felt like the boys played well, but were clearly still figuring things out, which seemed to be the sort of bottom line of the game. Couldn't get buckets when we needed to down the stretch. Couldn't get stops when we needed to down the stretch. And that leads to a loss, basically, is what it seemed like to me.
Yeah, the defense was struggling there at times. We did get to see Luis Scola, though.
Did we?
A little bit. He actually matched up against our power forward, Paul George, at least at the beginning of the game. But
and Paul George just shut him down. I mean, didn't even allow a field goal attempt by Luis Scola.
Wow.
Which is, it's impressive.
Total domination.
Yeah, I thought in the first half, really quick hands. We got our hands on a lot of passes. Forced a lot of transition, got a lot of easy buckets, and that's how we got to 30 in the first frame. Total of 14 steals on the game and only 13 turnovers, which you'd think would bode well for us. But ultimately, we only shot like 37%. Paul George was 4 of 17. I really thought he looked a little bit hesitant, you know, kind of in his first game back.
I thought all the guys kind of seemed that way. I mean, Monte Ellis. I mean, at the beginning of the season, you know, preseason, I had sort of penciled in Monte for 18 to 20 every night. He certainly had a tough shooting night, but he also wasn't very assertive, I didn't think, on the offensive end.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I don't know if he's waiting to kind of see, you know, how he fits into this team. That definitely could be part of it. But, you know, both the two guys who I think we expect the most scoring out of, PG and Monta Ellis, did not have great shooting nights. Mm-hmm. Didn't crack the 100 mark.
Well, so we were close in this game down the stretch, and I was, you know, Jason, you told me that I shouldn't panic about a bunch of terrible shots. You know, we got a couple stops here and there. It looked like we could, you know, get back into this game, and we jacked up a bunch of terrible shots in very quick succession. Now, I was impressed on, I think we were down six. They ran a nice play for CJ Miles to come clean on a three-pointer, and he just missed it. But otherwise, it was kind of just a lot of running at the basket and, you know, seeing what happens. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's the goal, right, is to get up as many shots as possible. But it's nice to have actual executable plays when, you know, the game is on the line. And it seemed a little like we didn't have that quite figured out yet.
I don't know. We got George Hill was 5-7 from three-point land. I thought we did a great job of setting him up on some nice short corner threes, which he was canning all night. I didn't think that we were totally without direction. I just, you know.
No. I just mean in the final minutes. I don't mean all night. I just those last few plays.
Well, I think, yeah, certainly that those sort of bread and butter plays, whatever those are going to be, we haven't quite ironed those out yet. And DeMar Carroll was matched up on Paul George, so the throw it to Paul George and let him do something play, which is pretty much our de facto go-to, wasn't exactly working super well. Although, to his credit, PG got a little more assertive in the fourth quarter, and at one point, I think with about a minute left or something, had drove to the lane, got an and one that got us within one,
yeah,
and then he missed the free throw. And we could never quite rebound after that or whatever. So.
The only one he missed all night. He was 9-10 other than that.
Exactly.
Really nice stat line, 17-12-8 from him. Got three steals.
Considering he couldn't hit the broadside of the bar.
Yeah, I mean, it looks kind of good on paper, but he just, you know, we're going to need some pretty big games out of Paul George pretty consistently to compete against a playoff team on the road to win games. So.
Sure.
I do want to highlight one other thing that this game illustrated for me that I hadn't really thought about was, you know, we'd spent all this time consternating about Paul George playing the four and being undersized at the four, which he certainly was, although I thought, you know, mostly they played CJ Miles at the four and dealt with it okay. The other thing is that Monta Ellis is going to be outsized basically at any two-guard matchup that he plays. And that was especially evident here where he was having to guard DeMar DeRozan, who's, you know, 6 inches taller and, I don't know, 80 pounds heavier than him or something like that. Basically, they were just going to him in the post, you know, for the first five or six possessions of the game, and it really forced the Pacers to have to deal with that at some level. And I don't know that they ever really figured that out. Right. So that'll be something to keep an eye on going forward, I think, is not only how this small ball lineup is going to work defensively in the post, but then also there's this other liability sort of at the two guard position. But
I did want to end on a high note here. One thing that clearly we put a lot of time in the offseason too was our free throw defense, which was great in this game. Unfortunately, we did a really bad job rebounding off those misses.
Oh,
but
God.
It's like many turnovers, but yeah, held them to less than 70% from the line.
Go ahead. Was anyone else? I said go ahead, and then I kept going. Wow.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Screw you guys.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, just kidding. Go ahead, Harper.
I'm so confused. I was just going to say that they, you know, it felt like the only time they hit any throws in that game was down the stretch when they needed them. So they actually did a pretty nice job closing out on us. That was it.
Well, I was curious about, you mentioned rebounds off of missed free throws. I was curious about Jordan Hill sort of playing so many minutes in the fourth quarter and how you all felt about that. Is this guy...
Not good.
Yeah.
I'll take the con side on this one. you know, I think the new players, particularly Monta Ellis and Jordan Hill, you know, the Pacer fans are going to keep an eye on because these are the, you know, the new big guys. And I was, you know, I thought Monta just didn't score a lot, but man, Jordan Hill was just not playing well, and you know, not passing the ball well, not finishing, not able to hold on to passes, and just not impressed with his debut.
He's just not that great at basketball, I think, because that's his main deficiency.
It might be a thing, yeah.
I think I was texting you, Joey, or maybe through Slack, and we were talking, and I was saying his jump shot, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Oh, God, yeah. And the way that he shoots free throws, I'm not really a big fan. But it turns out that that's not a big deal, because the rest of the week he didn't really play, because Miles Turner.
Right, and I mean, at the end of the day, he was 8-8. Jan Mahinmi played okay, but he was a walking foul, so we didn't have any options. Mm-hmm. And LaVoy Allen played, he just did nothing in his 12 minutes, right? So he was our second best big on the court, not including BG.
So. Yeah, and that might be a problem going forward. If Jordan Hill is your second best big man.
Right. Well, Miles Turner was nursing an ankle, so he got a DNP for this one.
Yeah.
But we'll certainly talk more about what we're going to do with the bigs. That will be a topic.
This takes us to the second night of a back-to-back, October 29th, home opener versus the Memphis Grizzlies. Pacers can't hold on, lose 103-112. Jordan Hill replaces Paul George at the power forward spot to start the night, and I think it was because you don't want to match Paul George up against Z-Bo.
That
you
is correct.
Out of all the big and poundy teams, Memphis is the biggest and the poundiest. they immediately, you know, I guess before the game even started, they forced the Pacers to change the way they were going to play the game. Because we've seen this team before. We know what they do. Harper, you watched this game?
I did, yeah. It was sort of, it ended up being interesting from a coaching standpoint because Memphis, I mean, they started their five guys, of course, but then they kind of went small and we went small and it, you know, there was a bit of a coaching matchup deal that was going on throughout the game. Really, we were competitive all night with a really good Grizzlies team. Certainly, it's a little disheartening to give up 112 points to anybody. But surprisingly, the Grizzlies actually led the NBA in the preseason in scoring, which surprised me.
Mm. I think that's the reason the preseason doesn't matter. I think.
I mean, they looked pretty good on offense for what it was, and they were able to put up 39 in the fourth, and really that's the difference in the game. We're going to get a lot of that early in the season. You know, we're just not in a position to be able to close out these games and get the looks that we want when the pressure gets tuned up a little bit, and that's a combination of, you know, a new chemistry and some younger guys, and that's growing pains. But this is a really good team. It's not an embarrassing loss by any stretch. Thought Paul George looked a little better. Monta Ellis didn't look much better. but we, you know, we had a pretty good first half. We were leading rebounding at the break. But it just the wheels came off in the fourth, and that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah, we fell apart again. Kind of not being able to execute down the stretch. Was it Courtney Lee who hit the big three, or back to back threes that kind of put it out of reach there near the end? One of their guys,
Jeff Green, I think.
Was it Jeff Green?
He definitely hit one down the stretch. I remember.
Yeah, that hurt. But I don't know. I think we probably need to start a new drinking game every time Paul George complains about a call. We should take a drink.
I don't think my liver can take that.
I enjoy living. I am not going to do that.
We will all be blacked out by the second half.
I don't know if I can drink that much water.
No, but he got a tech like 90 seconds into this game. For complaining to the refs after being fined $10,000 after his all NBA referee complaining performance in game one.
Yeah, he got his money out of that 10 grand though, didn't he?
I guess
he got some work in on that ref.
Yeah. Yeah, he just seems... I mean, I love PG. Let me preface this with PG is my man. He's the key to my hopefully successful fantasy NBA season and a hopefully successful Pacers season. But he's playing like a spoiled brat or like a privileged kid that thinks that he should have more than he's actually earned so far. I mean, he's stepping on the floor and acting like he's LeBron James and expecting calls basically every time down the floor. And I mean, at some level, I understand from his perspective, he kind of earned a rep in the league, but he hasn't been around for a year. And referees have short memories. You got to re-earn that, I think, in this league. And I don't know.
Yeah. There's some of that for me, and there's also you're going to get more calls as a great player on a great team. Paul George, the last time that he played substantial minutes, was a great player on a great team. You're going to get calls.
Right.
He was the best player on an Eastern Conference final team. We're not that team anymore. We're not going to get the benefit of a lot of those calls. And that has nothing to do with PG. That has to do with our team as a whole, right?
Right.
And if you're going to get those calls, you're going to have to be aggressive, going to the rim. And I still thought he was a little bit timid in this one. My theory on this is that during the offseason, we had to watch a lot of film trying to understand the new system, and we just watched way too much Clippers film drew all the lessons from them, and that's how we learned a bitch like this.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, like, we're definitely playing a faster tempo. I think we're, like, in the top – what I don't know after the Utah game, but after the first two games, we're in the top, like, five in the league in pace in terms of possessions per game. And we look good in the open court, like when we get deflections or steals or even off rebounds and get out and go. We look fine, but in half court,
terrible.
We look just as bad as we did a year ago, right? Which is, it's very stagnant offense. Nobody really knows exactly what to do, it seems. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will be a problem that will be addressed slowly as sort of offense gets installed. But I'm definitely concerned. I'm a concerned supporter right now.
Right.
Is the way I'll put it.
You know, Harper, you bring up the Clippers, and you know, we think of Chris Paul as being a whiner, but that whole team is being a whiner. And on some level, Chris Paul being the best player on that team provides the example for the rest of that team. And that's, you know, that's something that you know, JJ wrote in and mentioned that this may be leaking into the rest of the Pacers. If Paul George is going to be this, you know, going to be our leader, but he's going to be a guy who bitches and moans on the floor, this whole team's going to start doing that. It's a real concern.
Right.
That's the wrong culture you want to create.
Yeah, it's just difficult to watch. And I felt like, especially in this game, you know, we would get a little momentum going. We get the ball moving. And we're trying to push our advantage. But people are stopping to bitch at the refs. And it's like all the Grizzlies do defensively is get you out of rhythm, right? So the second that you've got any rhythm, the last thing you want to do is slow yourself down so you can complain, so you can chirp.
Especially when they're running down the court about to get a freaking layup. It's like, man, play defense. Come on.
That was brutal for me. And I hope that gets better. I hope that Vogel addresses that. And the other thing that Paul George is going to need to understand is that a lot of these calls, he's not the only guy who's attacking the rim now. Monta Ellis is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of these calls, right? So there's just going to be less calls to go around. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. We talked, you know, in our preseason deal about, you know, how defense would be a concern, but how, you know, we do have good defensive players. And I think that we have done a great job getting into the passing lanes and using quick hands. We forced 12 steals in this game too, you know, and turned a lot of those into points, which is a big deal. But we're going to need that in order to be competitive, especially early until we figure out the half court. So I think there are good signs here, but
yeah, and let's start putting stuff together. Let's build on those good things, because there were a couple of the, I mean, the first thing is that we fought with this team, right? Like, they got out ahead pretty big early, and the Pacers found a way to scratch and claw and get back into the game, which is a great sign. I think that's something to build off of. And the other really nice sign is we got the NBA debut of Miles Turner, future Hall of Famer Miles Turner, who really was the catalyst for us getting back into the game. I thought he came in late in the second quarter and played into the – or sorry, late in the first quarter and played into the second quarter, and I thought he really – his energy and enthusiasm on both ends of the floor were really critical in getting the Pacers back into the game, I thought.
Absolutely.
I'm excited about this kid. He's got moves on top of moves. His activity defensively is, I mean, he's a little, you know, lost sometimes, but it's not for lack of effort, right? I mean, he's trying his butt off, which is great.
And he's got a great stroke.
Mm-hmm.
You get those blocks too, like the fun ones.
Yeah.
And you get to see his hair in slow motion when he does that, when they show the replay. Which I'm a fan of.
What was the vibe in the building? Because it's been so they announced it as a sellout, but I know you were posting pictures of lots of empty seats.
Yeah,
it's been about a year since the Pacers have been good, so I'm just wondering what the vibe is in the building of like what people are.
You know, expecting. You know, it was opening night, so you know you're gonna maybe get a little bit more people than sort of had they played the same team, you know, in February, but. What happens is that there's going to be, you know, more sort of hardcore fans, better basketball fans. So, you know, they're definitely very knowledgeable, people there. And, you know, they're calling out the things that they don't like. But it was pretty, you know, pretty upbeat in general. You know, if you're playing in Memphis, it's going to be a tough game regardless. You know, so you don't beat yourself up losing to the Grizzlies. But you know, the vibe was pretty, you know, pretty good. And just kind of escaping the first quarter was rough. So, you know, people were, Jason, like you said, like when they kind of clawed back into the game, people were excited, were happy about that. You know, I talked to a couple people around and they, you know, just said, hey, you know, that was great. Like we kind of thought it was over after the first quarter. And just getting back in is, you know, mm-hmm. That's somewhere to start, at least. Everyone knows the team is not the same. We're kind of starting over a little bit. And, you know, just want to kind of check in and make sure that this team's not going to, you know, go down the 76ers path, you know. Nobody wants that.
Not even the Sixers.
No. But the Pacers had another game at home this week versus the Utah Jazz. They came up short this one too. It's Halloween night, and may have been spent better trick or treating. 76-97. Pacers come up short. Second half was rough. They put up 12 in the third and 15 in the fourth. Coming in the first half was up, kind of played them straight up. The wheels fell off. And Colson, did you get to see the fourth quarter of this one?
Yeah, I wasn't real happy about it. I wish I'd been able to see the first half where we played them straight up. Maybe because it was the deficit at that point, but I saw just a lot of lack of effort and a lot of terrible defense. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem like it was completely out of reach at that point. I was very disturbed by what I was seeing. I don't know if I just... I don't know. This was very disheartening game for me. So, you know, I'm okay with getting beat by a better team, but I don't want to have my team be beat on the effort end of it. You know.
Yeah. I saw plenty of good defense. It's just none of it was on our team.
Mm-hmm.
Gobert was.
I was gonna say it's a good thing you didn't see the whole game, Colson, because you would be in full panic mode.
Really? So was it the whole thing lackadaisical? Because, I mean, I just assumed it was because we were kind of out of it at that point. Like, I mean, it wasn't out of reach, but we were, like, getting beat, and I figured we just kind of laid over.
I mean, first half, certainly we played well. I mean, we're up by, whatever, 9 or something, 8 at halftime or something. against a decent Jazz team and playing really scrappy defense, I thought. I mean, the big mismatch that the Jazz had going for them was Derek Favors was going to be guarded by CJ Miles, and he generally chalked that up as a win for Derek Favors.
Right.
But the Pacers really shut him down. In the first half, got him in foul trouble early, and he really didn't score. Now, the thing that happens is that these guys are professionals, and they have coaches. And at halftime, they made adjustments, and they said, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to feed Derek Favors the freaking ball, and he's going to be an animal. And then the second thing we're going to do is we're going to step up our defensive intensity because we haven't been playing good defense. And the moment they did that, the Pacers' offense just broke down. Like, we did not get a single – like, it was horrible. Like, every possession was just bad. There were a lot of OMFGs, the on-my-own field goal attempts from mid-range.
Yeah.
And couldn't get stops defensively. And all of a sudden, you're down 15. And you're like, whoa, what the heck is going on? And then it's hero ball on the other end. It was bad. It was a bad scene.
Right.
Bad
scene. I mean, the stats that sort of jump out for me, obviously we got out-rebounded, and a lot of that was in the second half. They were just gobbling up glass all night. We only had 10 assists on the night, which in this system is just not going to work.
Nope.
We've got to be moving the ball if we want to win. We turned the ball over 24 times. We had a season low 8 steals, and 8's not a bad number for most teams, but for our team with 24 turnovers, that's not going to work. I think you're going to be able to look at box scores all year, and turnovers is going to be the bellwether, right? Because we're going to have to move the ball a lot, and if we're not taking good care of it, we're going to lose games on turnovers.
24. That was an awesome TV show. I did not want that being my turnover number. That is insane.
Yeah.
Monta Ellis had 2 blocks, though.
Monta Ellis have it all.
I mean, he does have it all, except the scoring.
Well, he was a bit more aggressive in this game. I mean, things, like I said, third quarter, things turned into a shit show. But the first couple quarters, he was at least a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to be. Like, he's the de facto leader of this team. Is he the best player on this team right now? Yeah.
And he's also an 11-year vet. I mean, maybe he's the leader of this team.
But I don't think he's, like, he clearly hasn't embraced that role, right? Because he's the new guy, and it's Paul George's team. But
right.
I think that if we're going to go places, like, he has to be one of the main voices in that locker room.
Right? Absolutely. And more importantly, on the court. I mean, I think that he's approached this so far in the right way, in that it is Paul George's team, and he has been deferential. But that doesn't mean that when Paul George steps out and is, you know, chirping at the refs instead of playing defense, that's still Monta Ellis or Miles Turner's place to go to him and say, cut that shit out, right? I don't care who you are. I would love if Monte is a guy who stepped up, and it's fine if he does that gradually. But he definitely needs to be a louder voice. He understands basketball, and he knows how to play it the right way.
Well, and in, I mean, this game, not so much, but the Toronto game and the Memphis game, down the stretch here, we're kind of thinking, like, all right, somebody's got to take this game over. And typically it would be Paul George, but I'm fine if Monta Ellis wants to step up and be like, look, we need a bucket. I'm going to go get a bucket.
And
like,
he's already hit some big shots early this season. Really has.
Yeah. And he clearly has the pedigree and track record shown that he is capable of doing that, you know?
And over time, that's going to take a lot of pressure off Paul George, and that in and of itself will pay dividends. Right now, it just all looks kind of bad. George Hill was a little bit more aggressive in the fourth quarter, but he turned the ball over 7 times. That's not what George Hill does for us. George Hill is Matt Cassel. He's a game manager. Mm-hmm. We can't have him turn the ball over 7 times. That's just, we're going to lose games.
On the other hand, though, he is on fire from 3.
Yep.
He is hitting... in all the games, he's hitting 3s. And if he's going to do that, this year is going to be interesting because it's going to stretch the floor out. And if you've got to respect him out there, it's going to leave some room for Ellis and Paul George and Big Jan to get in the paint.
Well, we're doing a great job of getting him the Bruce Bowen 3, right? And that's a shot that he can hit.
Well, you know, they've got Ellis and PG ball handling a lot and letting him run off screens. And... yeah, he's getting pretty wide open.
Yep. Yeah, CJ was also miserable in this one. 1 for 9, 0 for 6 from three-point land. It was just, the second half was just, it was, yeah.
Well, they came out of the break on a 10-0 run, and it was.
They never looked back.
I mean, they were playing a different level of basketball. It was different. It was ridiculous.
And, I mean, to their credit, Trey Burke played amazing for them. Obviously, Derek Favors is a beast. Everybody knows that. I think this is a good team. We talked about this team flirting with the playoffs this year, even though they only won 25 last year. They're a good team.
Well, all of that may be the case. Maybe all of these teams we played are playoff teams, but they're coming out of halftime with more energy and more effort in every one of these games. We're losing these games down the stretch, not in the first quarter. You know, if we want to be a playoff team, we're going to have to figure out how to raise our game. And I know we're still figuring out our system and maybe who the leader is and all that stuff, but, you know, starting out the season 0-3, something's not working right.
Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. Everything's great. Just how we drew it up.
Joey, make it better.
Man. Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatable. It's got some new followers. Thank you, everybody. We got us a Facebook page. It's on facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form. We've got some good contact forms filled out.
See, Joey, you did make it better. I said make it better, and you did.
Yeah, there you go. You can review us on iTunes. Yeah, it really helps new listeners find our show. We've got t-shirts for sale on the website /store.
Sorry, wait for the motorcycle.
No, we just drown it out in song.
I'm sure that Bobby and his family are feeling for Mel and his family right now, so prayers and wishes out to them. But for our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, turn out the lights, the party's over.
That was pleasant. maybe the motorcycle preceding it made it sound better.
Maybe.
Sweet.